Welcome to the Sports Zone on WHRU-LP 101.5 FM Huntley Community Radio. I am your host, Anthony Collada, and we have got an absolute packed show for you guys this week. I'm super excited to jump into it, so let's get started right away with our best moment in sports, and it goes to Kyle Schwarber, as he is playing for Team USA in the World Baseball Classic. And this comes as he homered in Game 1 of the World Baseball Classic against Great Britain. The home run made the score 5-1 on the U.S.'s way to a 6-2 victory to kick off the World Baseball Classic. But the big moment here around Kyle Schwarber's home run is I'm pretty sure he's the only player to accomplish this feat, as I was not able to find any other player that's ever done it. Kyle Schwarber has now hit home runs in the AL wildcard and NL wildcard series, the AL divisional series and the NL divisional series, the AL championship series and the NL championship series, the World Series, and now the World Baseball Classic. That is 8 separate series that Kyle Schwarber has now homered in each level of the playoffs, both conferences. It doesn't matter. The dude can mash. And as a former Cubs player, and there's a lot of conversations around the Cubs when they ditched Baez, Bryant, Rizzo. Schwarber was actually a year before all those players when the Cubs let him go. And even looking back at it now, it only makes me think this more. But even at the time, I was like, man, of all those players, I honestly thought Schwarber was kind of the guy that I wanted to keep around. You know, he sees the ball very well at the plate. He hits for a ton of power. He's willing to take his walks. He could play left field. He's got a cannon for an arm, and he's a fantastic designated hitter. So in terms of all the main players the Cubs sold off, I almost consider Kyle Schwarber to kind of be that one that got away. And when you look at his track record, especially in some of the biggest games, he shows up. I mean, here, he missed the entire 2016 season with a torn ACL and then showed up for the Cubs and helped them win a World Series. I mean, the guy just shows up when it's time to play. And to me, he's the one that got away for the Cubs. But a fantastic moment there for Schwarber as he tries to help Team USA continue on in the World Baseball Classic. And as we take a quick look at the rest of the countries around the World Baseball Classic, we take a look at the U.S. games. I mentioned that they handled Great Britain, and then they were thumped by Mexico late Sunday night as Washington Nationals outfielder Joey Meneses crushed 2 home runs for Mexico to defeat the U.S., and now the U.S., they find themselves in some hot water. They need to keep winning or they get bounced before they even make the play-in, you know, like the next round of the World Baseball Classic. So U.S., they've got a fantastic lineup, but that starting pitching is, it's not up to standards as you would look at the offense. So I'm thinking the U.S. is going to have to score 10 runs a game. The offense is capable of it, but if you run into a hot pitcher or pitchers like they did against Mexico last night or Sunday night, it might be tough to win some games there if you know the pitching staff's not quite up to it. So U.S., couple games there. They need to find some ways to win some baseball games here in the next couple of days. You take a look at the Japan team, Shohei Ohtani, the worldwide sensation on the Angels. He made his return to Japan after 6 years being over here in the States now. And, man, did they embrace him like the Pope, like, you know, like the greatest figure ever over in Japan. And, you know, he's given his hometown everything to cheer for. He's already racked up 6 hits and 8 RBIs in a couple of games, including his first home run of the World Baseball Classic. And the biggest thing about that home run that I noticed was the fan that caught the ball actually passed it around. The ball was being passed around the bleachers after the home run by Ohtani, and then the fan that caught the ball actually got the ball returned to them. You would never see that in the States. If Shohei Ohtani hit a home run into the right field bleachers in Anaheim, if you give that ball up, you ain't never seeing it again. So that shows how much Shohei Ohtani means to baseball and means to these Japan fans and how much of an impact he had up until that point where he came to the States. So just an interesting, kind of really cool moment that you would never see over here. And then one other quick note for the Korean team. Ha Sung Kim, the shortstop for the San Diego Padres, crushed two grand slams Sunday night, early Monday morning, on their way to a 22-2 victory over China. They actually mercy ruled in that one. It only went five innings. So you look at the Padres real quick. They got Tatis back, their shortstop. It's looking like they're kicking him to the outfield to keep Kim at shortstop. So he's got a good glove. He's got some pop in that bat, so two grand slams there as Korea defeats China. And then we take a look at the NFL offseason. This is where all my excitement really is. And you got to start with the Bears trading the number one overall pick to the Carolina Panthers. The return for that one, the Bears, they received number nine in this year's draft, so they essentially flipped one for nine. And then they get pick number 61, which is in the second round this year. They get a first-round pick next year, which should be a top-10 pick. If you take a look at that Carolina Panthers roster, especially that offense, it's not very talented. So it should be a good pick because wherever if the Panthers, you know, their top five worst team, now the Bears slot right in there. And then the Bears also picked up a second-round pick in 2025. But the biggest move that, you know, a lot of people kind of maybe don't pay enough attention to, the Bears got DJ Moore, the Panthers' number one receiver, in this deal. And when you look at it, Panthers were looking to trade DJ Moore in the offseason last year. And they were asking for two first-round picks. Now, when Carolina offered this pick for number one with the Bears, they were offering a 2025 first-round pick. And Ryan Poles, the general manager for the Bears, said, no, I don't want that 2025 first-round pick. I want DJ Moore. He wasn't backing down. Carolina ultimately did. So essentially, the Bears got this receiver who the Panthers were looking for two first-round picks from. They got him for a first-round pick, only one, 2 years away. I don't think a lot of people really truly understand the value there is there. DJ Moore is only 25 years old, and in five seasons, he's racked up 5,200 yards and 21 touchdowns. Now, let me read you his quarterbacks. He had a washed-up Cam Newton who couldn't throw the ball more than 20 yards in his final season. He had Kyle Allen, who's a backup somewhere now. I don't even know where. Will Greer, who I don't even know if is in the NFL anymore. Teddy Bridgewater, who, again, another career backup. P.J. Walker just barely made the NFL for the first time 2 years ago. And then Sam Darnold, who is going to be on his third team, and he's still in his 20s. So all these quarterbacks are terrible, and DJ Moore still put up 5,200 yards. And when you look at it, the Bears' all-time leading receiver in terms of yards is Johnny Morris. He has 5,059. So DJ Moore, in five seasons at 25 years old, already has the most receiving yards in a career than any Bears receiver ever. And this guy played in the 50s and 60s. So DJ Moore, already the Bears' all-time leading receiver in terms of yards. And then you look at touchdowns, he's already at 21. The leading touchdown getter for the Bears was Kevin Kavanaugh at 50 touchdowns. And these guys played 9 and 10 years. And he's already well along his way to those numbers in terms of Bears rankings. So you finally get Justin Fields, his A.J. Brown, his Stephon Diggs, his Tyreek Hill, like you see in Philly, in Buffalo, and in Miami. You finally get that number one receiver for that quarterback, and then you see these quarterbacks take that huge jump. So now, step one's out of the way. Now it's time for Fields to rely on DJ Moore, rely on Mooney and Claypool. That helps push Mooney and Claypool kind of into their number two, number three spots rather than forcing them to be the number one target. Now you can start cooking a little bit here with this offense. And the only knock I will say on this trade is I think you maybe could have waited a little bit because here the draft's not until like third weekend in April. This happened second week in March. So you do have a little time there that you could have waited. And, you know, that point gets brought up because the Carolina GM is talking about trading out a number one. After already trading up for the pick, now he's saying, you know what, we control it. And if, you know, you still got to go through combine, you still got to go through pro days. If they notice that there's not one quarterback that they love over any of the other ones, now they can afford to trade back. So that's the only argument I see there with making this move so early. Just because, you know, a lot can happen over the next month. But Ryan Poles, he says that he's got a list of 5 to 9 guys that he absolutely loves at number one. Well, if that's the case, you know four quarterbacks are going. So that only leaves a total of four picks before you pick again at 9. So essentially, if you do have that 5 to 9 guys that you really love and it doesn't necessarily matter to you, then 9 doesn't matter at all. And I could see why you did that. He got his number one receiver. So I don't have a problem with the trade. I can just see that as being kind of the number one argument to the trade. And then with the free agency moves now, you can start talking about those with the free agents on Monday. The signings start becoming official on Wednesday, and the Bears are already active in the free agency market. They started it off like right as the deadline to start negotiating hit. Looked like the Bears had signed a linebacker from Philly. He's 26 years old. His name's TJ Edwards. They signed him to a 3-year, $19.5 million contract, $12 million guaranteed. He was the leading tackler for the Super Bowl contending Philadelphia Eagles last year. And in 4 seasons, he's got 389 career tackles. So an absolute tackle machine there. Bears get a linebacker to help fill that void that Roquan Smith left. But the Bears weren't done there at linebacker, as they also, this one a little bit bigger of a signing, they signed Tremaine Edmonds, the linebacker from Buffalo, who has already played 5 seasons in the NFL, but he's still only 25 years old. They signed him to a 4-year, $72 million contract, $50 million guaranteed. It is said that a lot of that money is going to be front-loaded in the contract, so first 2 or so years, because by that time you hit that 3-4 year mark, now it's time for Justin Fields' contract extension. So if everything goes according to plan, you got Edwards on a 3-year deal, you got Edmonds essentially on a 3-year deal with that final year not having as much money locked in. Now you, again, clear those books right back up for a Fields extension. And then one more signing, guard Nate Davis. The Bears signed him from the Tennessee Titans. He is also only 26 years old. He signed a 3-year, $30 million contract. So 3 signings already for the Bears. You've got a 26-year-old or 2 26-year-olds and a 25-year-old. They're on 3 4-year deals. You're starting to sense a pattern here for the Bears. You can kind of tell that where they're trying to look to be at. And if you take a quick look at the Roquan Smith trade that they made halfway through the season last year. So essentially, Roquan Smith signed for $20 million with the Ravens. Rather than the Bears signing Roquan for $20 million, they decided to go with Edwards and Edmonds, which are equaling about $24 million a year. And then they got that second round pick from the Ravens. So you can kind of tell, yeah, Roquan Smith is a top 3 linebacker, but Edmonds is a top 10. And then you've got another really solid guy in Edwards. So you essentially, for $4 million, you pick up an extra guy and a second round pick. Now, you can argue one way or the other which side won that deal, if you'd rather have Roquan instead of 2 guys. But now with Edmonds, Edwards, and Jack Sanborn, who really came on last year, you've got a very solid offense or a defensive linebacking core there. So now you need a guy up front on the D-line, and you could start seeing some things work on that defense. And then with Nate Davis, he's never played left guard before. He's battled some injuries in Tennessee, but when he's healthy and he's on the field, he was considered the Titans' best offensive lineman. It'll be interesting to see what they do at the guard position. Cody Whitehair could be cut for $6 million in savings at left guard. But then you had Tevin Jenkins at right guard, who it wasn't his original position. He struggled early in camp, but he really came on late in the season. Now he's battling. He had a neck injury at the end of last season. So we'll see kind of how Poles views Tevin Jenkins in the long-term plans as well. That's the Bears news. Some other quick points around the NFL with all these signings. Big news in Baltimore with Lamar Jackson. With the Ravens forking over that $20 million for Roquan Smith, there wasn't as much room there for a Lamar Jackson extension. So they hit him with the non-exclusive tag. And what that means is Lamar Jackson can now go talk to other teams, you know, negotiate, try to work out some deals. But Baltimore ultimately has every chance to match any contract offer that Lamar Jackson gets. You know, cool. It's not the first time anyone's ever seen this, except there's no teams interested in Lamar Jackson. And you can make the argument, you know, they're not interested in the black quarterback, or, you know, this, that, and the other, he can't throw. But I think a big point and you go back to last year and you look at the Aaron Rodgers situation, at how many teams pissed off their actual quarterback because they're like, oh yeah, you know, we want Aaron Rodgers. And then you fail that experiment. Now that leads you back to your other guy. And that now you're, if you're that other guy, it's like, well, you were ready to ditch me. Why do I want to play for you anymore? So I could see that being an argument that, you know, if you are somewhat happy with who you have at starting quarterback, maybe don't ruin that relationship for a maybe situation. Interesting to see there. I ultimately think Jackson will end up back in Baltimore, though. Daniel Jones, he gets a huge contract from the New York Giants, 4 years, $160 million. He finally made the playoffs for the first time in his career. So hopefully for the Giants' sake, that wasn't a one-hit wonder, but he does seem to kind of maybe start figuring it out. The Giants team is starting to get some more talent, so a big contract there. And then they also franchise-tagged running back Saquon Barkley, so the two top players on their offense stay together. The Los Angeles Rams continued their fire sale with a Jalen Ramsey trade to the Miami Dolphins. In return, they got a third-round pick in 2021, Hunter Long. He's a tight end. He played 9 games for Miami last year, didn't catch a pass, and then a third round pick in this year's draft. That's kind of pennies on the dollar for still a top corner in Jalen Ramsey, still only 28, but that the tag on him, his contract, is just so much money, hence the lower package coming back to the Rams. And then Jimmy Garoppolo finds a new home. He leaves San Francisco and ends up with the Raiders. They sign him 3 years, $67.5 million. So the Raiders essentially traded Derek Carr for Derek Carr because they're basically the same quarterback. I do think Garoppolo maybe is a little bit better. Has a history with Josh McDaniels, the coach in the in Vegas, but just, you know, not anyone that's really going to move the needle all that much, especially when you had Derek Carr already. And then we take a quick break for station ID. You're listening to WHRU LP 101.5 FM Huntley Community Radio. Quick notes, we got the NCAA March Madness Tournament starting up on Tuesday this week. And you got the first four matchups. Those run in Dayton, Ohio. And then you got the whole tournament running through April 3rd. You've got games across the U.S. in Houston, Phoenix, San Antonio, Indianapolis, Detroit, and Las Vegas. And some things to watch, you got your number one seeds, obviously. Alabama, Houston, Kansas, and Purdue are your one seeds. And some teams to look at in the West region, you've got Kansas, who are the defending national champs. They've this is their fifth time since 2016 being a number one seed. So they've a team that's been there before. They know how to win. You got number three Gonzaga as well, who reached the tournament, seems every year, at least the last 24 years under head coach Mark Few. But Gonzaga's never won, and that was always kind of one of their big hits, that they don't play in the toughest of conferences, and once they do make the dance, they don't end up making it all the way. Gonzaga, another team to watch there in the three seed. Out in the Midwest region, you got number one Houston. They're still waiting for their leading scorer, Marcus Sasser, to return from a groin strain. And obviously, once you start getting into tournament time, you want your best players on the court. So hopefully for Houston, they get him back. And then in the South region, you've got another number one Alabama getting the one seed for the first time in school history. So there's a lot of stuff going on around Alabama basketball during the regular season, with Darius Miles getting that mass shooting charge against him, with the teammate who possibly brought him the gun and whatever. But the team, they kind of put that aside, clinched that number one seed, and now we'll see how far they go in the tourney. And then you got number four Virginia, who is back in the dance after missing last season. If you recall, back in 2019, they were the national championship, so another team that has been there before. And then finishing up with the East region, you've got number one Purdue, who got the best bid. They've never won a national championship, and they've never been to the Final Four, or haven't been to the Final Four since 1980. So they finally get the one seed. See how far they can push that one out this year. And then a little bit of an underdog, Cinderella story here. Number 12, Oral Roberts, is back in the dance after missing last season. They made the Sweet 16 as a 15 seed in 2021, and they still have their leading scorer, Max Abmas, from that 21 team. So we'll see if Oral Roberts has another Cinderella story push in them. And as we take a quick look at the NBA, there weren't too many big performances, but definitely some noteworthy games and whatnot going on, as the Denver Nuggets spoiled two back-to-back triple-doubles for Nikola Jokic after being 25-0 when he does put up a triple-double. They lost to the San Antonio Spurs on Friday, 128-120. Jokic put up 37-11-11. And then again on Sunday, they were unable to get past the Brooklyn Nets, despite Jokic putting up 35 points, 20 rebounds, and 11 assists. And right now, it's not all peaches and rainbows, as they say in Denver here. Michael Malone, they asked him about it after the game, and he goes, "We need players who can guard. You know, they're really hurting defensively. They're seeing a couple injuries here and there to some of their top players. And, you know, they're struggling defensively right now. And for a team that's in the one seed, you're starting to wear down here on the season. You need that number one seed team to start figuring it out real quick." So two spoiled triple-doubles on Jokic's on his MVP season. Another note, is Chris Paul cursed? I think we can finally say Chris Paul's cursed. I mean, here, you look back at his entire career history. Between the playoff injuries, the blocked trade to the Lakers that would have allowed Chris Paul to team up with prime Kobe Bryant. You've got beef with a couple of refs. CP3's ever won a playoff game with Scott Foster as his referee. I mean, it's just all these little things that it just seems to keep Chris Paul from that coveted championship that he really needs for that resume. Well, it happened again. This time it's an injury to Kevin Durant, who they just traded for, and it happened in the worst way, which is why I say he's cursed. Kevin Durant slipped on a wet spot on the court during warm-ups. He was going up for a layup, and he slips, sprains his knee, and now he's out at least 3 weeks. Right, again, right as the season's starting to approach, you know, that play-in, the playoffs, all of that, and now the Suns lose their best player, who they just traded everyone for. I'm telling you, Chris Paul's cursed. Hopefully Kevin Durant can get healthy, because basketball is just always better when Kevin Durant's on the court and playing at his highest level. And the Suns, I think they're going to be a fun team to watch if they can all get and stay healthy. Klay Thompson moves past Paul Pierce for 11th all-time in three-pointers made. He now has 2,153 three-pointers. That's crazy. We know Klay Thompson's a dead-on shooter. Then you put him with Steph Curry, who's the number one all-time shooter. You probably got the top two all-time shooters on the same team. It's no question why they won so many finals over the last so many years. And then a career night for the New Orleans Pelicans' young up-and-coming star Trey Murphy, as he put in 41 points and a career-high 9 threes against the Portland Trail Blazers. And it seems like every week the Portland Trail Blazers are on this list for getting crushed by some player, allowing a player to have a career game. But hey, it makes for a fun topic to talk about. So great game there for Trey Murphy. And then a final note around the NBA. Before we wrap it up, you've got the Sacramento Kings, who reached 40 total wins for the first time since 2006. And funny note, there were some fans at one of their, you know, opening preseason games that after they won, they were leaving the stadium chanting, "Yo, we're going to win 40 games this year. Woo!" You know, all excited. And, you know, it's the Kings. When, you know, it's like teams like the Rockets, teams like the Cubs, the Sox, you know, teams that are bad that never are good. You don't expect them to end up being good. Well, the Kings, they finally did it this year. They hit their 40 wins for the first time since 06. And the biggest thing is, you look at that trade that the Kings pulled off with the Indiana Pacers. At the time, the Kings had a very young up-and-coming star in Tyrese Halliburton and a fantastic three-point shooter in Buddy Hield. And then you look at the Pacers, they had a fantastic center that does it all in Domantas Sabonis. But you look at the two rosters. The Kings already had a star point guard in De'Aaron Fox. It was hard for Fox and Halliburton to end up playing together. And then on the flip side with the Pacers, it was hard for Sabonis to play with Miles Turner, their center that was already there as well. So it is essentially, you had Halliburton and Fox, Sabonis and Turner. Let's just flip two of them. And it's worked out both ways. Tyrese Halliburton is a double-double machine with points and assists in Indiana. And Sabonis is a triple-double and has helped the Kings reach 40 wins. So that is the ultimate definition of a win-win trade in the NBA. And then as we wrap it up, I'm not going to call this a best fact, best moment. I'm just a little questionable on this one, and I'm going to let you guys kind of help make a decision. Is the Pau Gasol jersey retirement with the Lakers this week? In seven seasons with the Lakers, he averaged 17.5 points, 10 rebounds, and 3.5 assists in the regular season, and then 16.8 points per game, along with the 10 and 3.5 in the playoffs, including being a two-time champion back-to-back in 2009 and 2010. You know, those aren't outstanding numbers. He was never really one of those guys that you just stood out that absolutely, you know, dominates on the court. And then you look at all the, you know, several of the other players that the Lakers have retired. You got Kobe's number 8 and number 20 or 24. You got Wilt's, Chamberlain's number 13. You got Magic's number 32, Kareem's 33, and Shaq's 34. I'm just not sure Pau Gasol and his number 16 quite falls into that list. And, you know, maybe if he retired with Memphis or San Antonio and played his whole career with some of those teams that don't quite have the talented history that the Lakers have, maybe Pau Gasol gets his number retired there. I think, you know, he was a fan favorite. It's just, again, the numbers just aren't quite there. I liked Gasol when he was with the Bulls. Again, I'm just not sure he was quite there. I'm kind of back and forth on it. I'm going to let you guys make the decision. But with that, we wrap up our Sports Zone this week. Super fun show, super packed. I was super excited to come do it. So stay tuned for next week. We'll have more NFL news, World Baseball Classic, and who knows what else we'll find. So till next week.